This is Tom Bernard. Can't get enough of sports talk with Phil Mackey and Judd Zolgad? Tune in to the new Tom Bernard Show podcast Monday through Friday as Phil and Judd join me to discuss the latest sports headlines and whatever else comes to mind.
Just download the Tom Bernard Show app wherever you get your podcasts or visit TomBernardShow.com. It's another way to get more from me and Judd talking sports and having fun with Tom, and it's all at your fingertips. Download the Tom Bernard Show app now and join the conversation.
Phil and Kyle start a podcast, and Rudy Gobert comes to town. Hardly a coincidence, it's Flagrant Howls with Phil Mackey and Kyle Tighe.
That's right. We're the ones that get things done around here. So we're going to start a podcast. The only way we're going to do it is if you trade for one of the greatest defensive players in modern NBA history. And that brings us here to episode 3 of Flagrant Howls. Kyle is now back, hopefully somewhat rested from his Vegas Summer League experience. And this whole episode is going to be all about the things that you learned, good, bad, and ugly, from Vegas Summer League. Was this your first Summer League?
No. So ironically, I started going back in like 2009. That was the Steph Curry, Rubio, like Blake Griffin draft. My dad took me and my friends, and it was such a small deal at the time. It was like $10 general admission, $100 for courtside all day, which was like a steal because you sat next to the players. They don't do that anymore. But I mean, they had 100 people in the arena for that. And now this is just like they fill like a 13,000 person stadium. I mean, it's so big now. It's gotten to be, I was going to say this, but Summer League is the NBA's Super Bowl. It's not All-Star Weekend. It's not the finals. Because like All-Star Weekend, all those players want to go have vacations. Every team is represented. All these players come through. It's all on the team's dime. So like everyone's here. I mean, I walked into the Wynn and Corey Brewer's playing craps. And then I see Jason Tatum's over there. And then there's Taco Fall. And then there's Mark Cuban like getting a latte. So it's insane people watching. It's a must for any NBA fan or someone trying to get into the industry. It's also great for like getting autographs if you got little kids. So yeah. Summer League has exploded, but it's such a fun time.
It's amazing. So I've never been to Summer League. So I'm going to live very much vicariously through the things that you learned. And I think what probably happens is, you know, most of the teams have been eliminated by the time June rolls around. Yep. And there's a lot of teams that have been eliminated for 2 months by that point. And so it really is. It's like a middle of the off season point for a lot of the teams that didn't go deep to just like, all right, I'm bored. All right, it's been great. I've already done my little yacht tour around, you know, Hawaii or whatever it is. And what fascinates me too is how LeBron James every year just kind of shows up, sits courtside. This year there was a big athletic documentation column about how he and Russell Westbrook did not speak to each other during the hour and a half that they were there. But like stuff like that that wouldn't have been a story at all 10 or 15 years ago just gets magnified because it's NBA and the Summer League has exploded. And I love it.
And everyone's there. And like they're still running this modern day Super Bowl event at this arena that's like UNLV's gym, which is connected to like also like a high schoolish gym. But in between is just like a mezzanine level where there's like Dippin' Dots and coffee and the worst food in the world. But that's how players and coaches and GMs and Woj get from one gym to the other. So like I went to get coffee and then like there's Ben Simmons getting pizza. So it's just like you're so close to these guys. LeBron has to take the same entrance that I took. So it's a great people watching. It's great networking. It's great just to see all your favorite players. So it was cool.
Well, let's fire this up here. These are things Kyle learned at NBA Summer League in Las Vegas. I'm assuming some of these are Timberwolves related. Some of these might just be lifestyle things that happen
there's
in Vegas.
There's some lifestyle ones at the end for sure. No, I mean, this one came out over the weekend, but we were able, like, again, the Wolves were well represented by 42 front office members. They had some players there, Jaden, Nate Knight, Jalen Noel, D'Lo was there. But we could confirm, so Carl Anthony Towns signed his Supermax extension a couple weeks ago. He has 2 more years on his normal contract and then a 4-year Supermax. Him and Devin Booker signed the exact same Supermax deals. Carl's has a player option in the 4th year where Devin Booker's doesn't. So hypothetically in 2027, that summer when the Wolves don't have a pick, Carl's also going to have like a $62 million player option. Can't imagine he turns that down, but it was just like something that we confirmed with some people there. And it's also something to keep in mind because like it is a little weird. I don't know who they were negotiating against in terms of like giving him that option. You thought they would just be 4 years, you know, all under team control. So just something to put a bookmark in now. Not a huge worry, but instead of 6 years of team control, now it's only 5 years. So we thought that was a little weird. I don't know if you'd heard that yet.
No, that is interesting. And I think the question that you asked is the one that I have too, which is who are you negotiating against? It's such a little thing because it's so far into the future. It's after the Gobert contract runs out. Is it maybe, I'm trying to think of the timeline here. He probably caught wind of the Gobert trade discussions. And did he maybe say, well, why don't we line? Because let me ask another question. When would Anthony Edwards' max contract run out? Because would kick in 2 years and then it'd be a 4 year max?
Yeah, I think it would go one more year after that. The reason I brought up Devin Booker is because they signed the exact same. They came in the same year. They signed the exact same supermax, but they're represented by the same agent. Her name's Jess. So it was just kind of like, it raises an eyebrow. Like, why would Booker get that deal all 4 years staying in Phoenix? And then this one just has this little slight crack that, I mean, again, if Carl's balling out in 2027, then that's great for the team. That means he's been playing awesome and you just renegotiate another one. It's just weird. It was a weird thing. I think maybe Nikola Jokic got it too. So it's not like reason to worry, but that was kind of the big Karl Anthony Towns news over the weekend.
Aggregators out there, the headline here is Karl Anthony Towns wants out of Minnesota by 2027.
Yeah.
Just put that out there.
Karl wants out in 5.5 years.
Yep.
That was just like a little housekeeping. Another one too is, again, you see all these people at Summer League. So just getting coffee, doing whatever. Timberwolves alum that were in town that were kind of noteworthy. I said Corey Brewer. Every time I saw Corey Brewer, he was gambling. So I don't know if it was just he was doing some him time or else he might have an addiction. But
let's take a guess here. How much money do you think Corey Brewer made in his NBA career? Maybe you already are a nerd. I haven't looked this up yet,
but I would imagine
he's done, right?
Yeah, he's done. I would have. I'm looking up on Spotify.
Wow, he still played in 2020 with the Kings, and he's not that old. He's like 36.
I was gonna. I have the number here. I was gonna say 60 million, and I don't know if you said it. Looks like he made 55 million. So
$55 million. Good for him, man.
And just to think that, as we just talked about, Carl. So Brewer made 55 million his whole career. Carl will have a $62 million player option in 2027.
That's insane. Another thing, since we're down this, how much did players make side street? So when I was looking for some Rudy Gobert comps, like we talked about last week, about the Dallas Mavericks from 10 years ago, Dirk Nowitzki and Tyson Chandler, decent comp. Although 10 years ago, you didn't have to run out. There's like 18 more three-point attempts per game that you have to sort of worry about as a defense now. But Tyson Chandler was regarded for a long time as, because he was supposed to be him and Eddie Curry were supposed to be the next generation after the Michael Jordan Bulls, right?
Yep.
And so there's a lot of people that's because they weren't that Tyson Chandler was just kind of a bust and he never really panned out. So for some reason, I was doing a deep dive into Tyson Chandler's career, which lasted almost 20 seasons. And he only made one All-Star game. He was the defensive player of the year one of those years too. So he had like a couple really good defensive seasons. He was a very solid player. Tyson Chandler in his NBA career made almost $200 million.
He had a good agent.
I mean,
that's crazy.
And he was a good defensive player, but man, these guys, I can see why some of the old school players, like these damn youngsters, they don't know what it's like to have to ride buses and make only six figures instead of nine, you know?
It's going to be crazy too, because if you're on Spot Track, you can see like a player's career earnings. And I think, like I saw Devin Booker, by the time all his deals are done, he's going to have made $350 million or $400 million. And it's just like, but then again, you think about like in baseball, Aaron Judge is going to sign up maybe $500 million. So it's just like these numbers are getting to the point. We actually talked about this with some people in Summer League. Like, we'll probably see a guy sign, like have a $500 million, like $100 million a year deal at some point before we all die. Like, that's just where these numbers are going.
Yeah, well, hell, I mean, we're going to be 2/3 of the way there by the end of these next max contracts. I remember, like, when Steph Curry signed a super max, 3 years ago, whatever it was, like, holy crap, he's going to be making 50? And now very quickly it's 60 at the end, and soon it'll be 70, I'm sure, by the time. Like, Anthony Edwards, when he signs a super max, let's see here. So he'll be 22 or 23 when his max kicks in. And that, so, like, his first super max will be, like, 27. Just like Towns, I guess.
Yep.
by the end of his Supermax, he'll be in his early 30s, and it'll almost certainly be for like $75 million on the back end, I would think, in one season.
He's going to be awesome to see what he does with that much money too, right? Like, he'll just, maybe he'll buy the team by the time he's 35 and buy it from A-Rod.
That's the other thing. It's like, yeah, some of these guys, how many guys could retire from sports? And now it's like these guys retire. Alex Rodriguez retires and like, well, I just got, I don't know, $1 billion burning a hole in my pocket. I think I'll help buy the Timberwolves.
Yeah.
It'll be great.
So, yeah, so back to the alum. Like I said, saw Corey Brewer, Dario Saric, Jared Vanderbilt was in town hanging out with the Jazz a little bit. He was in good spirits.
He was not happy, by the way, with the way the Timberwolves sent him off in a group Twitter graphic. It was, here's goodbye to all four of these guys. And Jared retweeted, like, what, can't even get my own graphic?
And I think he was trolling, but that whole thing came up a couple other times throughout the weekend by just, like, you know, like we're talking to media people from Denver and stuff. They're like, yeah, that was kind of weird, right? Like, they couldn't send four separate tweets. And as someone who sends a lot of tweets, I was like, yeah, you know, that probably wouldn't have been that hard. But, He was in good spirits. He's a huge human. I forgot about how big he is and how jacked he is. Tayshaun Prince, saw him. He was, I think he's with the Grizzlies front office. He was cool to talk to. David Vanterpool was in town. Tom Thibodeau. Ryan Saunders. So the Wolves played the Nuggets on Friday. So Ryan Saunders was there on behalf of the Nuggets because he'll be an assistant coach. He was in great spirits as well. Chatted with him. I think the biggest one we saw, sitting courtside for the Knicks game one night, was our former friend Gerson Rosas.
Yeah,
he was there with another person you might recognize.
Yeah,
and then
good
one
for
night,
them.
Yeah, good for them. One night too, I was out with Dane Moore and Jace Frederick. We ran into Josh Okogie at the Aria. He actually spotted us, came over and like kind of thanked us and talked a little bit. I think he seemed kind of down that he's not going to be back in Minnesota, but he was pretty excited about kind of a new chapter for him in Phoenix. So shout out to Josh, because I think Josh was probably one of the three favorite people I've ever talked to. He's just such a good dude. He's going to miss, he mentioned multiple times, like missing the community because he was so ingrained in that. So he was another guy I saw. And then kind of to cap off the alum list, grabbed dinner on Sunday night with Dave Benz. He was in town.
Does Dave have, he looked like he was doing some freelance for somebody.
Yep,
I saw
so
him.
He's got a house still in the Bay, so he was down in San Francisco. He and he is very well connected. So he didn't do any pickleball stuff this year. That'll probably pick up. But he's doing some Giants things. I think he's calling an A's game maybe next week. So he seemed in good spirits. Doesn't really know what his next step is, but he did mention multiple times that he saw every hashtag Bring Back Benz. Like, he saw all the nice messages and stuff. He had nothing but great things to say about the Timberwolves fans. So
that's cool.
Cool catching up with him.
I'm super curious to see what they do. Have you heard any rumblings about what Bally's is going to do? I'm assuming Jim Pete's coming back. I hope.
Jim Pete was in town. I didn't get to run into him, but we texted a little bit. He'll be back by all accounts, and he's beloved. I also think, too, like they'll probably just lean into maybe like I think they're also big game hunting for this position as every other position, but maybe they'll
Marv Albert. Who are we going to get? Mike Breen. Let's do
right,
it.
Right.
Let's not stop at Tim Connolly. And Rudy Gobert, let's Kevin Harlan coming back would actually be
awesome.
I would say like 10% realistic and 100% amazing.
And, you know, I think Mark Lowry and Alex Rodriguez will have a lot of say in this. I would imagine they'll probably bring in like maybe a younger like female partner to pair with Jim. Just kind of, you know, they're talked constantly about adding diversity and those things. So that'd probably be the way I'd lean. I don't think it's gonna be Marnie. I think she has no interest in that. That's why she doesn't want to travel. That's a grind of a job. You fly with the team, but
yeah,
it's a lot of work. So yeah, Ben's wanted to say, you know, a shout out to all the fans. He was in great spirits. It was cool to see him. The other thing, so we're there and I have a lot of friends in the Denver media. So we just kind of hung out with them, grabbed dinner, drinks. Tim Connolly is a savage. Like Tim Connolly's a savage to them. They're gonna miss him. They told some kind of wild stories about him. I think they backed up the idea that he likes to have a beer or seven with people. So if you see him about this summer, like, don't be afraid to go up to Tim and
do you
buy
think
him a
Tim
drink.
Connolly was buzzed a little bit the first time he reached out to the Jazz this offseason after taking the Timberwolves job and just said, hey, I'm like 2.5 beers in right now.
100%.
How available is Rudy Gobert?
100%. And it sounded like, you know, everyone in the front office was pretty on board with that move. You know, like, we've kind of talked about this before, but Mark Lowry, Dane Moore got to interview him on Saturday and talking to him a little bit. Like, he was very much like, if this is who you want, Tim, you know, you've seen the memes out there, F them picks. Like, Mark was like, go get your guy. So, but yeah, a lot of, I mean, also too, he had like a gravity to him. He didn't go to the Friday night game. He came into Vegas on Saturday, Tim Connelly, but I think he was trying to avoid any Nuggets drama on Friday night. Like Josh Kroenke was there, and I'm pretty sure Josh Kroenke like hates Tim because he left.
His public comments were weird. And he made those weird, well, he did call the Wolves a desperate franchise, which it stings if you're a Wolves fan, but it's kind of true over the last 20 years.
And by the way,
avoiding Josh Kroenke, would be good.
Yeah, Josh Kroenke looks like if you the old Twitter CEO. He just has this weird. He's just like a weird dude too. I mean,
he looks like Jack.
Yes, like Jack. Yeah. So Tim kind of avoided that, but then he was sitting courtside Sunday and he was holding court. I mean, he like Wilson. A lot of players would come through, shake his hand, like they made a reason to go see him. So a lot of other people though, talking to like the Pelicans beat writers, talking to people. A lot more writers and podcasters and stuff are super intrigued by all this, and like. They're like, we don't really care what you paid to get him. We think you guys are going to be really, really good. So it was cool kind of seeing the national people don't always follow the Wolves. They don't care. But these people that do nerd out and follow the Wolves a little closer, even if they cover a different team, they're pretty intrigued by all this. And they think the Wolves are going to be pretty good.
The only people, first of all, the only person I have heard complain about how much money Tim Connelly is set to make is Josh Kroenke. And if you really started to ask around the league, I'm sure owners would ideally like to keep the cost down. Anytime one of the top front office guys gets his salary doubled, then I'm sure if you're Mark Cuban or whoever else, you're looking around and saying, all right, well, is this going to reset the market for the top president of basketball operations? But in a league where all these franchises, we started to do this math on our show a few weeks ago that like, so Tim Connelly, what is it? It's like is it $50 million it's $40 million
over five. Yeah.
Okay. So he's making like $8 million a year.
Yep.
And there are some, as Glenn Taylor grabbed the microphone during the introductory press conference and said, I'll handle that question. He's got bonuses. It's just bonuses like anybody else has. So let's say his bonuses are tied into the value of the team going up or something because because they win a bunch of games. It's a freaking drop in the bucket. Let's say for a franchise that is worth about $1.5 billion right now, I want to say like 1.55 or something. And there's other teams, similar market sizes like Milwaukee, they win a championship. Now they're worth closer to $2 billion or whatever. And maybe I'm getting the math wrong on this, but if your franchise with a great front office hire and a bold trade and a young superstar and Karl Anthony Towns over the next 5 years can go from being worth $1.5 billion to $1.8 billion or $2 billion. No one's going to talk about, boy, but Tim Connelly costs us a lot of money, right?
Right, right, exactly.
Drop in the bucket.
Yeah, and when that whole, and I think Doogie's reported on this, but like when they sold the team originally or they agreed to that number, I had one friend who was in Atlanta was just like, they could sell it. They're supposed to, take over fully in 2023. They could sell it December 2nd for probably $2 billion, right? Like they got it on a discount anyway. You've added all these powerful people. You've added a lot of talent. It's already a discount. So, yeah, for Connelly to get in on that, the one interesting thing from some Denver people was that, and this goes back to the Josh Kroenke thing, I think when Tim left, this is Doogie, big scoop. I'm just giving little scoops here. Like, it sounded like Tim was like, I'm not going to take anyone. It does sound like behind the scenes he did try to maybe bring Darrell Arthur, who former player, over to Minnesota. And Darrell Arthur had to, like, answer some questions. And then Saturday night went public. I was like, I'm not leaving. I'm staying here. So that might have ruffled some feathers in Denver. But again, too, like if I was taking a different job, I'd try to like, we're friends. Like, hey, do you want to come with me? Do you want to come with me? So I think it's
Denver has this triggers me a little. Denver had a chance to match the new value of Tim.
Correct.
The new value of Tim Connelly is whatever a quote unquote desperate franchise wants to pay for him.
Yep.
Okay. So the desperate Timberwolves come along and say, we're going to double your salary. All right, Denver. If you love Tim Connelly, and I think, and maybe you can confirm this, he would have preferred to just keep going with Denver and loved his time living in Denver and the people that he worked with. And if Denver would have made the same offer, he probably just stays in Denver. So it was Denver's decision.
Yeah, and not even that, but some of these media people are really tight with Tim. And I think Tim will get that tight with our Minneapolis media. But it didn't even have to be the same number. It didn't have to match, right? Like, yes, they doubled his salary or whatever. It could have been 1.5 times. I think he would have liked seeing that thing through. And if you're the Cronkies, like, you own the Rams and they won the Super Bowl, right? You own the Avs, they just won the Super Bowl. You own 13 other teams, including like Arsenal. So it's not like they didn't have the money. I think, and again, this is just judging a book by its cover, but seeing Josh Kroenke, I was just like, yeah, that dude just probably believes in himself and his system. And he's like, nah, screw it. Leave.
Yeah.
Just don't. So yeah, I'm with you on that. Also, too, the last kind of nugget I had on Connolly was these guys were saying from Denver that he had been talking about Chris Finch like a year ago, like just unpressed, like just they'd be talking to him off the cuff at getting a beer. And he'd be like, yo, that Chris Finch is like a wizard. Like, I love the way he coaches and stuff. So I would imagine that Finch had a big part in kind of the recruitment of Tim Connolly, but also Tim finally making the move to come over here. So I thought that was cool.
And probably green lighting the Gobert thing too. I mean, just trying to think of how quickly that went down. So it all happened within a few weeks. And then you got other irons in the fire for some of the other players, DeJounte Moore or Murray that went down the path for a while. But I'm guessing that there was a ton of conversation with Chris Finch just schematically saying, hey, can this work? We don't have to do this. This is kind of all of our careers here. We're putting our legacies on the line a little bit by making this trade. So tell us if you don't think this can work, and we will take the assets that we would trade for Gobert and maybe move them somewhere else. And smart people got into a room and said, no, we can make this work.
And you think back at the trade deadline, it was just really Finch and Sachin. But we had heard over Summer League that like the Wolves had really kicked the tires at that time on like Domantas Sabonis, who would have been a much less exciting fit on this team next to Carl because they both kind of have defensive liabilities. But having interest in a big at that time kind of leads me to believe that Finch had a lot. I mean, I knew Finch liked the Walker Kessler draft pick at the time. Gobert's just a better version of all that stuff. But I think Finch probably has been looking for a while. It's like, I want to play big. I've done it before. I've shown I can make it happen. So I'm with you on that. I think Finch had a lot to say in this.
Yeah. All right, let's keep going down the list of things Kyle learned at NBA Summer League in Vegas.
We're on bullet four here. Like, maybe we should actually talk about the games.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Josh Minot. Let's talk about the first game. It's funny. I had for our Monday, we had to do statements on Mackie and Judd.
Yep.
And, got a couple glasses of red wine in me and watched the first Summer League game. And I just, like, I had these are all of my Summer League observations ready to rock for Monday. And then the other game happened. And they combined for like 13 fouls between the two draft picks. I said, well, maybe we just ignore that one and I'll just bring my excitement from game one. But yeah, what did you observe watching?
We're sitting on like media row there. I was with Jason Dane and we were amped for that first game on Friday. Sunday night, I was glad to be there, but we couldn't have cared less. I think it was because at one point the two teams were 3 for 50 from three.
Yeah.
And you could just feel that energy. No. So we got to talk to Josh Minot a lot. Got to talk to Wendell Moore. Two really great people. Very different personalities. Wendell Moore seems like Kevin Burleson mentioned this. He's coaching the team. He described him as having an old soul. Mm-hmm. He does. He sounds like he's a 35-year-old guy talking. Josh Minot is like a 14-year-old kid talking. He is way more like Ant off the cuff. He was awesome in his first game. I also think two Sunday's games sucked. Those guys, and Wendell Moore brought this up when we talked to him. You know, they had their season and then they went straight into 2+ months of like workouts and draft stuff. And then you go like you get drafted and you go do a press conference and you do a week of practice and you go to summer league. Wendell Moore's like, I haven't really like he's from Duke. He's like, I don't know if I've been to my apartment in like 2 months. So I think those guys are starting to get tired legs. But Friday night, Josh was awesome. Hurt. We were talking to Jonathan Sharks from The Ringer and he had mentioned some story about Josh Minot where he was recruited to Memphis by like the second in command there, the assistant. Meanwhile, Penny Hardaway had recruited like Duran, who got drafted like in the lottery, and then Imani Bates, who was a really big time prospect. So Penny went and got his two guys for the front court, and then this assistant went and got Josh Minot. So once they all got together, Penny's guys kind of got preferential treatment, right? Like they got the minutes. So I think it kind of bummed Josh out. He probably didn't realize what he was signing up for, and it kind of affected his play in Memphis, his mood. And I think that's why he probably dropped in the second round. But anyone you talk to after you asked, like I was talking to a Pistons guy after the Gobert thing, he goes, what do you think about Minot? So he had a lot of buzz for being drafted like 48th overall.
Yeah.
So that was pretty cool. And he's a great interview. If you ever get him and Ant in the same room this season, it's going to be must watch TV.
Well, the other fascinating thing to me is you see sometimes these kids when they're, you know, 17, 18 years old going into college and maybe they're a one and done, or maybe they go play overseas. Isn't that what LaMelo Ball wouldn't play in like the
Australian
League or something. And then you look at his numbers and you're like, it's kind of unimpressive. But then when you unleash some of these talented players in the Summer League or in the NBA, they look totally different. And Josh Minot, I believe that was the most points he scored. If you take all 33 of his freshman games at Memphis and then this Summer League game on Friday night, that's the most points. It was like 10 rebounds, a couple of three. He looked like this free-flowing player that almost like a – I don't want to make a direct comparison to Jaden McDaniels because I think they have different skill sets and they're different in certain ways. But it just looked like, oh, man, that's not the player that – you might have saw at Memphis, and it's certainly not a player that was limited to like 9 minutes in some of the end-of-season tournament games, but you unleash them in a more wide-open NBA environment, and they just react differently.
You know? Him and Jaden, when they show up to training camp, are going to be like the Spider-Man meme, right? Like, both highly touted high school guys had a bad year in college, and again, it does affect your draft stock, but I think that's another reason why the pick was awesome, because I think we already know that he was a first-round talent. Like, there aren't 43 players better than him. And to your point on Tuesday, he hit two threes, which we didn't really know was part of his game. He hit two threes in all of his time at Memphis. So we asked him about that. He's like, I've been working on my jump shot. I can't wait to show that the next level. But he's just a really good kid. He described himself as a lawnmower to Dane when he's like, once I get going, I don't stop. I don't know if he's ever mowed a lawn before, because that's not how it works with the bar, but he's going to be the new Josh Okogie for energy. He loves bringing energy. He has a chip on his shoulder. So,
but he's bigger too. It's like the problem with Okogie is like, he's like 6'4". He's like a power forward, but he's 6'4" and he can't shoot. You know.
And no offense to Josh, but when he came up to us at the Aria, I had a beer or seven, and I was just like, man, he is not much bigger than I am, and that's unfortunate, right? Like, you probably wish he was 6'6". He's got long arms.
But I heard when he turned around, he had an empty Starbucks cup and he clanked it off the garbage can. That's what my sources had told me.
Yeah, I can't confirm, but I wouldn't be against that. No,
great human being though. That was a completely unnecessary drive-by by me. I digress.
He's great, and he had such great things to say. He'll be back in Minneapolis, I'm sure, a lot. Wendell Moore too. Again, he didn't look as big. He's not going to be the biggest or the fastest or the most athletic. They're playing him a ton at point guard as just kind of the experiment in summer league. So, but I think, and this happens in other sports, but I think when you put Wendell Moore around just better players and he was being asked to do a lot of first option type stuff in summer league. When he's like the fifth option, he does have a nice stroke. He does understand the game. So I think he's going to be maybe he's their third point guard behind D'Lo and J-Mac this season. But
so I saw one. I was going through just some different, draft scouting report websites on Wendell Moore. And one of the NBA comps I saw, it was an old school throwback comp to the 90s, late 80s, 90s, Ron Harper. Like Ron Harper.
Oh, yeah. Senior. Yeah, that's a good one. Yep.
And it's like, okay. Ron Harper was initially a shooting guard coming out of college. And he was like a 20 points per game guy, I think, with the Pacers for a number of years. And then he goes to the Bulls and plays with some of the greatest players of all time as a point guard, 6'6", big body point guard, just a defensive terrorizer at the top of the key. So I think that would be sort of a best case scenario for Wendell Moore. But could he be? I mean, 6'5", right? Could he be sort of a big bodied combo guard who can get hands in passing lanes and knock down some threes? Maybe not as a primary scoring option, but that's interesting to me.
Yeah, and I think, too, if you're Finch, having, like, Jordan McLaughlin and Wendell Moore be your second and third point guards gives you, like, a trust factor that, like, they're going to run the offense. They're going to get, in your second lineup, like, you're just trying to get the whoever's out there as a starter, whether it's Cat and four subs, you're just trying to get the right guys of the ball. And Wendell Moore, I mean, he didn't pop physically, but he popped talking about the game. He popped talking about all the things he's learned and can bring. So I'm excited to watch him play. Just to go off the Wolves rookies, Matteo Spagnuolo was there. He seems like a really good kid. He'll be over in Italy. But he was funny to listen to. And then the last little note was, I don't know if you Friday night you saw that game, that Kevon Harris, he had that left-handed dunk.
Yeah.
That actually, I was on sports. I got out of my chair. I did the most inappropriate media thing of all time. But he's like a 25-year-old. He grinded with the Raptors G League a little bit. But he was cool to talk to too, right? Because it's 19 and 20-year-olds. That already have a silver spoon a little bit with, like, they're going to have a contract. They're going to be in the league. Well, he's 25 and just trying to, like, this is like one of his last chances. And he's a dog. He has such good energy. it was really, I almost got emotional talking to him. Like he's really trying to make this dream work. So I hope the Iowa Wolves pick him up.
Yeah.
I don't know what his status is for next season, but if he's on the Iowa Wolves, he would be kind of worth checking out a game just because he has a lot of skill. He's older and he doesn't want the dream of being in the NBA to die.
So he's like, he's 25. He's been grinding. Can you answer a dumb question for me? We were trying to figure this out on Mackie and Judd the other day. Can anyone can play in the summer league, right? Like if you wanted to, if the Wolves decided, you know what, Memphis, we're going to put Rudy Gobert on the court in a summer league game and jam it down your throats. Like you would never do that, but like you could, there's no, it's not like NFL practice squad rules where they have to be, you know, first two or three years in league. If you wanted to put LeBron James in a summer league game, in theory, you could, right?
Yeah, that we randomly joked about that. But yes, you can play those guys. Also, too, like from one specter, Gobert, all the way to the other side, you see their rosters have like 16, 17 guys. I mean, they play a 7-man rotation, 8-man rotation. It's actually big for some of those guys. Like I could be on the summer league roster and it'd be big for me to be like, yeah, you know, I was on the Timberwolves summer league roster when I'm trying to negotiate like playing in China or something.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Some of those guys just sign on just for like the clout of being associated with them. So that
just to go make $100,000 in Australia or something. Yeah.
Yeah. So it helps them out. But yeah, you could mean, you know, if they wanted to put Ant in a game just for fun, it would be,
do you think
awesome
they should have sent a message to Memphis or to Denver and said, listen, we're gonna put our legitimate starting five out here for one half? And just
I would have been so
three ACLs torn and an Achilles.
When you watch those summer league games, and I, you know, other than the names on the jerseys, there's often times where it's like, what's the difference between this and LA Fitness? The games are so bad. And it's just reckless, right? Because like, these guys are fighting for their career. So a lot of diving for loose balls. Like you just, I would not want Ant's ankles anywhere near like some grinding
for
guy
sure
for the Grizzlies. But yeah, anyone could play. So my
I
last
think what I, what real quick on one more note on just like the nature of the games, because there's a lot of guys that are fighting for their careers and roster spots and things, you know, the hustle factor can be a little bit frenetic, but it's not a bunch of dudes just lazily out there playing basketball. There's a lot of guys fighting for careers. And even with that frenetic environment, especially the first summer league game, Minot was two levels above energy-wise everybody else. I 100%. Mean, he was Energizer Bunny. I don't know what he does for conditioning on a daily basis. He probably wakes up and, you know, sprints on a treadmill for 4 hours, but that was noticeable to me. Excuse me. Like, okay, if you put this guy on the court, he might not be a sniper three-point shooter and might not be the most, like, honed, physically talented guy yet, but he is going to run back and forth and out sprint and out hustle players.
And I thought going into that like he was so raw, he was, but that he would just be best to live in Des Moines for the next 9 months and play with the Iowa Wolves. His contract status, by the way, he hasn't signed yet, right? Because it's like, is he going to do a two-way, which is kind of risky, or are they going to try to get him that Gupta special and get him one of those like Jalen Noel four-year deals? But I came away with it like he would probably be best served not playing, but being up with the big league team. Because at practices or in training camps, just having that energy, being able to, like, I don't know, spend a lot of time with, like, a Torian Prince or, like, having a veteran. Kyle Anderson would be a good one, too. Like, just having someone to be in his ear a lot might benefit him more than just, like, you know, spending a ton of time down in Iowa. But, yeah, so his contract is not – I would imagine they sign him. Also, too, I said this at the top. Like, Nate Knight was everywhere with the Timberwolves. I think he is an, like, restricted free agent, but I wouldn't be surprised if they bring him back, too, and that's kind of your roster, right? Like, Nate Knight –
maybe
Doc
he's your last backup big or something.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Gets him more of a chance.
He's like Jaden's like best friend, it seems like. So I would expect to have those two back. Otherwise, kind of to close it out, just some random stories. I was texting you about this too, but like one night, that same night we saw Josh at the Aria, we're getting drinks and we went to the craps table, high limit craps table. I was just watching. Ty Lue, Tayshaun Prince, Brian Shaw, Jameer Nelson. Ty Lue has like 200,000 in chips. Chameleonaire, the rapper, walks over. And Ty Lue is just as plugged into this craps game as he would be like a Western Conference Finals. It was insane to watch. He was rolling the dice for like 30 minutes. And that's like, that epitomizes what Summer League is like. Just normal people playing craps, playing blackjack. So that was a cool story. And then also too, Kevin Porter Jr. Again, this is how funny Vegas Summer League is. He was staying at the Cosmo. He's a guard for the Rockets. He was coming down the escalator behind us. And some people move around Vegas in those like, little cart things, those little scooters, and some lady in her scooter just ran over Kevin Porter Jr.'s foot. And I just imagine like if any Rockets fan was around, they would have had a stroke. So again, just my grandma on a scooter hit Kevin Porter Jr. with her cart, and like that's just Vegas Summer League. That's
Liz Frank fracture out for the season, career derailed. Oh my gosh.
So yeah, that was like that was just another you just see all these different people, but it was cool. We got like I said, Dane Moore had a really good pod if you haven't listened, with Mark Laurie. He was very open. He's very I kind of want your opinion on this. I don't know if you've listened yet, but I just don't know how many. I don't know how many owners are like plugged into the team as much as like Mark Laurie drops crazy statistics. Like he clearly is looking at this stuff. He's clearly plugged into like analytics, and he's very bullish on the team. I think he made a mention that they have a shot this year to win a title. So
I love that. So,
but he believes
what I have heard because when the news came out. Was it a year ago now?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's like a year. They've been involved for like a year. And I was trying to do some digging on, okay, other than just what we know publicly about the two companies he sold to Amazon and Walmart, and he helped really build Walmart's e-commerce infrastructure, and like he's been a huge player in these industries. What does he know about sports and basketball? Does he have any other? And as it was put to me by a couple different people, he knew next to nothing about basketball. And when you're rich, of course, you can expedite your learning process. So that's why he went out and hired Damian Lillard's shooting coach to teach him, I want to learn how to play basketball. And through that process, Damian Lillard's shooting coach recommended like 5 or 10 different basketball books. I think one of them was, I've got it right here, the Phil Jackson book.
Oh, yep, yep.
11 Rings, if you guys haven't read it. It's excellent. It's just Phil Jackson going through like all of his championships as a player and as a coach. But here's a bunch of books for you to crash course your way into basketball knowledge. And then I'm sure from there he started asking around, you know, okay, what are the analytics I need to know, right? Like I'm pretty sure he has spent the last year going from knowing almost nothing about basketball. Like he was even asking, what are the 5 most important basketball movies I should watch? I want to crash course my knowledge of basketball. And I think what's not that Glenn has been a micromanager, but I think sometimes sports owners can be a little meddly, like Mark Cuban's probably been guilty of this. Jerry Jones for sure with the Cowboys, but he doesn't feel like the type of guy that's going to get super hands on. Like he wants to hire smart people. He's also involved in a million different, he's trying to launch a city of the future for God's sakes. Right. He doesn't need to be meddling in personnel decisions, but one of his first priorities was let's hire the best possible person. Let's start with Pat Riley on a list, be told no, and then go down and we'll land our Tim Connelly. And so what you said off the top of the podcast, which is, listen, from Mark Laurie's voice, Tim, if you think Rudy Gobert is the guy,
go get it.
I hired you and I trust you and we pay you to make that decision. Let's go do it. Yeah, money, capital, vision is what he talks about.
Yeah, and he
or
and
money, people, capital, vision, I guess.
Yeah, I vision, capital, people, or as I put it, vision, capital, Jaden McDaniels. Like, he's the most important person. So he made multiple references too, which is very businessy. Like, you can't control the outputs, right? You can't actually control winning or that stuff, but you can control the inputs. And he kept referencing that. And his inputs are Tim Connelly, like bringing in all these other people. I mean, whether we like to joke about the Avengers front office, like, they brought in a ton of people. They're paying a lot of salary to their front office, probably more than 75% of the league. They went out and got Gobert, and they're like, again, what do you need to get this done? So I've been saying, too, like, you're not supposed to like your owners, right? No one really loves the owner of their professional team for the most part, but we're a year into this, and Mark, I mean, he hasn't really stumbled. He's addressed things in the arena. He's addressed things in the front office. They kept ticket prices the same. Those are going to jack up at some point, but that's what you do when you win 50 games and you have a lot of fun guys. So he's delivered on everything he said. And I think he's engaged and has his input, but I also think he knows like this is Tim's decision. That's Chris's decision or Finch's decision. Like he's not going to be having his input in the starting lineup. So far, so good.
Yeah. Maybe the most impressive thing he's done is come in here as a minority owner with, you know, 2 years down the road when he initially bought in with Alex Rodriguez, but he has massaged the Glenn Taylor relationship so well in a way where Glenn has essentially said, yeah, man, just go do what you got to do. Go spend $8 million a year on a new president of basketball operations. Go trade for Rudy Gobert. I mean, I'm sure Glenn also is signing off on some of these things and making some of these people look him in the eye, which is another thing we didn't get to. We have like a minute left here, but in our last minute here, what are your thoughts on Andrew Wiggins discovering rebounding for the first time? These are his quotes to the Point Forward podcast. When we played small ball in the Memphis series, I had to rebound. I'm in there rebounding, thinking, this isn't that hard. I can rebound. I'll never average 4 rebounds again. I look back now, like, how? I wasn't really thinking straight. I look back now, I don't know how it was possible that I was averaging only 4 rebounds. Andrew Wiggins, discovering rebounding,
yeah, shout out to Andrew.
Year 8 shout out to in Andrew the NBA.
Finding out about seatbelts 12 years into having his driver's license. No, I saw when you tweeted that out. I mean, it just backs up everything Wiggins said, or people had said about Wiggins when he was here. He's not a bad – he's actually probably one of the nicest guys in the league.
He
just loves his family. He loves his kid. He loves playing video games. But he's just clueless. You know what I mean? Like, he was clueless until – there was that viral video during the finals run where Andre Iguodala like grabs him and like starts yelling at him, and then Wiggins just went off. Like, Wiggs probably didn't have the best veteran leadership when he was in Minnesota, but on the same side, it's like if you're making $100 million, you don't know, like, hey, rebounding is important. I'm athletic. I should be able to grab more than 4 of these. It's on you. So, you know, wash your hands of it. It's done. But yeah, I read that and I was like, I'm going to have to start drinking. And it's like, nah.
Dude, amazing. Well, those are Kyle's Summer League observations and Vegas craps table observations. Great stuff. And I know we're kind of winding down the heat of the offseason here, but we have a million other things that we will dive into in the coming weeks here on Flagrant Howls. Maybe we can start cobbling together some fun guests at some point, too. Yep. And this is about as excited as I've ever been for a Timberwolves season. So three months.
Me and everyone else that covers this team and covers the league, like, They were one of the hottest topics in town, them and Kevin Durant. So I'm excited to get things started.
Awesome, man. Thanks, everyone. And if you could, if you've subscribed either on Spotify or Apple to the standalone Flagrant Howls podcast, if you could give us a 5-star rating and a positive review. And also, if you could click subscribe on the Scornorth YouTube channel and the like button on this episode, it'll help spread the word to fellow Timberwolves fans. We'll see you next week on Flagrant Howls.
Hi, this is Danny LaRue of the Real GM Radio Podcast. And while the NBA season is still pretty new, there are some interesting storylines going on. And for me, one of them is, let's call it a shift in expectations, because there are a couple teams that we expected to be not necessarily pushing the accelerator in the early going in the season, maybe seeing Victor Wembanyama and Scoot Henderson, this purportedly strong 2023 draft class, and going, hey, we could be a part of that. And that would be the Utah Jazz and the San Antonio Spurs. Both teams are over 500 with some nice wins. And this isn't fluky. They're playing well so far. And so we will see how they build on this, how they react to it. Do they keep pushing, see if it can keep going, or do they change directions through trades and everything else? So that'll be something to watch in this year where the draft class is strong and these teams have incentives going in both directions. Hi, this is Danny LaRue from the Real GM Radio Podcast. BetOnline.net is your number one source for betting football and the start of the new basketball season. Find all the latest player developments, matchups, news, in-depth analysis, and live betting and up-to-the-minute scores for every sport out there. Can check in on your favorite games and events, including the baseball playoffs, start of the hockey season, MMA, boxing, and golf, plus sports podcasts. So head to the website today or use your mobile device to learn more at BetOnline, where the game starts.